second part of today's program. Today's Kol Yom Rishon program is actually a lecture that is sponsored by the family of the late Dr. Abraham S. Weissman. This is a lecture series that was established several years ago, and we have had a number of really impressive installments of wonderful speakers who have spoken about a variety of topics relating to the field of medical halacha. Every single year, this lecture is given by one of the Talmidim, one of our students in the Smicha program, either somebody who is going on to a career in medicine, or one of our Talmidim who simply has developed a proficiency in the arena of medical halacha. Just to give a little bit of a background for a couple of minutes before I introduce today's speaker, I wanted to give you some familiarity into the legacy of Dr. Abraham S. Weissman. Dr. Weissman was a family practitioner who had a private practice right here locally in Washington Heights for about 60 years, during which time he serviced the Yeshiva University community. Among his patients were the Rav, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, and the Panovitcher Rav. Dr. Weissman was a true Yorei Shemayim who understood Ki Ani Hashem Rofe'echa, that the true healer of all patients is none other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Dr. Weissman was also a great family man. He was on the board of Yeshivat Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik here in the Heights. Dr. Weissman has two children. One is son, Dr. Charlie Weissman, who's the head of the anesthesiology department in Hadassah Hospital in Jerusalem. His daughter, Professor Evelyn Behar, who I believe is with us today, there she is a professor at the Library School at Queens College. Dr. Weissman's widow, his wife, Phyllis, is Baruch Hashem, still going strong in her late 90s, and our hope was that she would be at the event. But even if she isn't with us physically, she certainly is with us with her very strong moral support and endorsement and enthusiasm of this lecture series. It's now my pleasure to call upon today's speaker. It's a young man in our Smicha program, remarkable Talmud, by the name of Rabbi Ephraim Meth. Rabbi Meth actually has already completed his Smicha studies, and he's now in a post-Smicha fellowship. He's both the Dr. Abraham S. Weissman Fellow for the year and also a Ritz Learning Fellow this year. Rabbi Meth has published a couple of Sfarim, which are entitled Sha'ashue Ephraim, one on the complicated Sugyas in Maseches Chulin, and one that he just published in Maseches Yevamos. Rabbi Meth is true to the name of his Sfarim. He's somebody who really takes Sha'ashuim, tremendous joy and pleasure in the learning of Torah that is absolutely infectious. And we'll have the privilege of being able to hear some of that joy and some of that erudition over the next number of minutes as Rabbi Meth will speak today on the topic of a doctor's work is never done. When may doctors go on strike or resign? This is a very important issue, as we know that being a doctor is a tremendous responsibility. A doctor has to serve the community and often nullify his own wishes and his own personal life and personal conveniences for the sake of serving his patients. That is probably a part of the message and meaning of the famous Mishnah Maseches Kiddushin of Tov Sheberofim LeGehinnom, that even a good doctor maybe has a life that's a little bit of Gehinnom because he doesn't have the benefit of being able to have so much an independent, private, and personal existence and is constantly on the beck and call of the community. But at the same time, there's also a certain amount of dignity that has to be part of everybody's existence. And the question is, where do you draw the line exactly between the doctor's responsibility towards the community, the fulfillment of his mitzvah of being merape cholim, And on the other hand, the doctor's right to a personal autonomy and dignity and the ability to insist upon proper working conditions. So Rabbi Meth will share some insights into that subject, and I would also at this time want to acknowledge the presence of one of our Rebbeim at the Yeshiva, Rabbi Fulda, who I see is with us today. It's a tremendous schluss to have his presence and the presence of all of our very special guests at this event. So I call upon Rabbi Meth at this time.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Reis. Thank you all for coming. A special thank you to Dr. Weiss and his daughter, Professor Behar, and to my family, my mother, and my wife, my grandfather, all whose presence I very much value here today. In 1943, in an act of tremendous courage and heroism, the doctors of Holland went on strike to protest the policies of the Nazi occupiers of their country. And they actually all left the country in order to prevent the authorities from forcing them to go back to work. I believe in 2005, the doctors of Holland again went on strike, this time to protest a lowering of compensation that the Dutch government was offering them. A striking contrast between the two strikes of the Dutch doctors. In the course of researching the halakhos and the laws that are relevant to doctors going on strike, I discovered a profound and very exciting insight. Namely, that doctors share a unique relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, more unique than almost all other types of employees. To put it in other words, in the corporate structure of the cosmos, the doctors are much, much closer to top-tier administration than other types of workers. And I want to share with you how I arrived at this insight, in particular by comparing and contrasting the laws that govern in halakha doctors going on strike with those that govern ordinary workers going on strike. And I hope you'll bear with me because it won't be immediately apparent how this insight emerges from an analysis of these laws, but Be'ezras Hashem, in about half an hour, I hope that through analyzing the details of the topic, that all will become clear. The starting point for the question of striking as it concerns ordinary workers is a pasuk which appears twice in Sefer Vayikra. Source number one says that the Jews, when Hashem took them out of the land of Egypt, Hashem declares, "They are my servants, whom I took out of Egypt. They shall not be sold as sale of servants." And again, "For the Jews are my servants, they are my servants whom I took out of Egypt." In halakha, we learn three distinct laws from these psukim. Those three laws are codified in Shulchan Aruch, Koshen Mishpat, Simon Shin Lamed Gimel. The first law is that a worker is entitled to quit in the middle of the day. If he was hired for a full day from dawn until dusk, he has the halakhic right, under many circumstances, to walk out in the middle of the day and to not complete his job. Because the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch explain, the Jews are all God's employees. They're all God's servants, and they shouldn't be the servants of other servants. In order to prevent Jews from being, or to prevent workers from being servants of servants, the Torah gives them this right that they're allowed to quit in the middle of the day. A second halacha, which is tied to the first, is that it wouldn't be so efficacious for a worker to be able to quit if he had to suffer financial penalties for doing so. So therefore, anticipating that employers, in an effort to find a loophole or to detour around this initial permission which the Torah gave to workers, the Torah says that not only are workers entitled to back out in the middle of the day, but they're also entitled to do so without suffering any penalty. That in a labor dispute about their salary in the wake of their quitting, they are entitled to have the upper hand. And the third halacha, which is somewhat different in character from these first two, concerns not a dispute between the worker and his employer, but rather a worker's initial permission to enter into a contract. And this halacha stipulates that because all Jews are servants of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's unfitting for them to enter into a long-term contract which binds them to the servitude of a human master, of a human boss. So these are three halachos that we derive from the pasuk of Avadayim, that the Jews are my servants, the Jews are servants of Hashem, and they're not servants of servants. From a conceptual vantage point, we need to analyze what are the values that lie behind these three halachos. Is there a single value that lies behind all of them? Are there multiple values that lie behind all three halachos? Are there multiple values, some of which lie behind some, and others which lie behind others? So in the course of surveying the literature, which would take much longer than we have here, but I'm going to summarize four particular ideas that underlie these three halachos and which are reflected in the particular details of the halachos that govern labor disputes. The first value that underlies these ideas is the value of bitachon, of trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I've always been struck by the irony of the fact that the Hebrew word bitachon means at one and the same time security, security as in job security, security as in financial security, security as in national security, all of which we tend very often, job security, it depends on having a steady contract, a steady salary from an employer. That's what job security means in contemporary parlance. National security, what does national security mean? It means a strong army, it means strong diplomacy, strong weapons caches, good intelligence. Financial security means having a lot of money in the bank. But the same word bitachon, which we use to connote security, and we look towards physical and subsidiary things for that security, that same word in the Sifrei HaMusar VeHashkafa indicates trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, an awareness that the ultimate security comes from Hashem and doesn't come from Hashem's intermediaries and his agents. Without HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will, those intermediaries and agents, however much money is in the bank, however many missiles are in the arsenal, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will which really creates the security that we experience. And I think that this is part of what underlies this idea of Avadayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us constantly to be aware that we're not the employees of whoever our human bosses are. Ultimately, in the end of the day, we are his employees. He is our boss. He is the top CEO above all of the other CEOs. He's the Melech Malchei Hamlachim. And as a result, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that every contract that we enter into, and perhaps we shouldn't enter into long-term contracts, but even short-term contracts, which he permits us to enter into, have to be watered down. They have to be less than binding in order to emphasize that idea that ultimately we're his employees. And I think that this emerges by means of a contrast between the language of the Shulchan Aruch in source number 2 and the language of the Hagos Mardechai, which is the source of this ruling of the Shulchan Aruch. So I'm going to ask you to follow along for a moment in source number 2, Os Beis. And if you keep your fingers on Os Beis, I'm going to read you the language of the Hagos Mardechai, and then I'm going to ask you, what is the significant difference between the formulations of these two Rishonim, the formulation of the source, the Hagos Mardechai, and the formulation of the Ramah when he codifies it into law. So I'm going to read now the language of the Hagos Mardechai. I'd like you to please follow along in the Ramah. So the Hagos Mardechai writes, Yishli Zahir Limalamein Ode Sofer. It's appropriate for a teacher or a scribe to be careful, O Sharmalachos, or a member of any other profession, Milahaskir Aksmo, from hiring himself out, Liyos Bivis Balabayas, to be in the house of his employer, Liyos Bikeva Imo, to be with him permanently, steadily, Viliyos Samuch al Shulchano Bili Hafsek, and to be dependent on his table without interruption, Yosem Gimel Shanim. Liyos Samuch al Shulchano Bili Hafsek, to be dependent on his table without interruption, Yosem Gimel Shanim, for more than 3 years. That's the language of Yagos Mardechai that I just read. So can somebody tell me, how does this differ from the formulation of the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch? Bekeva b'li hafsi, precisely. The Hagos Mardechai is emphasizing that when a worker is so dependent on his employer that he's in the employer's house, he's totally dependent on his employer for his grocery bill, for his health insurance bill, for his rent. He's basically totally dependent on the employer without interruption. It's not as if he has a separate summer job or he works at night, you know, as self-employed. Totally uninterrupted dependence. That's what the Hagos Mardechai is emphasizing in the prohibition. The Ramah in Shulchan Aruch tones it down a little bit. He omits some of those strong words and he simply says, not to be bebased by a bias bekava. Don't be steadily in the house of a single employer for more than 3 years. But the initial language, the language of the source, seems to suggest that part of this prohibition is the idea of being dependent on somebody other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the idea of being dependent on a human boss and placing one's security, placing one's bitachon, placing one's trust in the paycheck of an employer rather than in the paycheck of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Melech Malchei Hamlachim. However, I think that there's more to it than simply the reinforcement of bitachon. For many, many years, I had a kasha on the pasuk in Sefer Bereishis. The pasuk says that when Yitzchak Avinu reached the age of 2 years old, so Avraham weaned him off of breast milk and started giving him solid foods. And it says that when this took place, Vayas Avraham Mishteh Gadol, Avraham made a great feast, not just a Mishteh, but a Mishteh Gadol, a big feast, B'yom Yigamel Es Yitzchak, on the day that Yitzchak was weaned off of breast milk. And lest you think that this was just some idiosyncrasy of Avraham Avinu, I actually found once in the Sefer Ta'ameh HaMinhagim, a collection of Jewish customs, which is fairly popular in the Hasidic world. It brings down, although I've never seen this custom actually in practice, but it brings down that there was or is a custom to make a Mishteh Gadol, a great feast, on the day when a child is weaned off of his mother's milk. And the question always bothered me, why? Why is this an occasion for celebration, to make a Mishteh Gadol on the Yom Tagmul, on the day of a child's being weaned? And a few weeks ago it occurred to me that the reason is connected with the confluence of independence and of dignity, both of which are very, very important values in the Jewish, in the Torah lifestyle. A child who's dependent on his mother's milk is very dependent. A child who is weaned off of his mother's milk, who's able to start eating salads, that can be considered the first tzad, the first step towards independence. He no longer is totally dependent on his mother, but now he can sort of forage on his own, he can eat on his own, he's taken the first step in the road to independence. And because Judaism is a religion that celebrates the dignity of independence, therefore it was fitting for Avraham Avinu, the progenitor of the Jewish nation, to make a Mishteh Gadol. And it's fitting for all of his descendants to make a Mishteh Gadol at a time which symbolizes the first step from total dependence to ultimate independence. And I believe that this also is a second value which underlies the three halachos that are derived from Avadayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, as his servants, it's fitting for us to be as dignified as possible, rather than shamed and disgraceful. And part of what contributes to a dignified existence is independence. The more that a person is dependent upon his employer, the more that a person is subservient and subjugates his will, his free will, his ability to choose what he's going to do with his time, to the will of somebody else, of some human above him, the less dignity and the less independence he has. And therefore, the halacha says, avadayim, that an employee always has the right to back out of a contract in order to preserve the dignity of his or her independence. A third value that underlies these halachos is the value of responsibility. Judaism is totally at odds with the concept of determinism, the concept that humans are not really in control, they're not really able to make choices that will determine the direction of their future. Judaism believes that it's important for everybody to feel a sense of responsibility, a sense that their decisions are going to result in whether they are bocher b'chayim, whether they choose life. Hachayim v'atov nasati lefanecha. God says, I place before you life and good, and chas v'shalom on the other side. Kadosh Baruch Hu can place before us the opposites of life and good. U'vacharta b'chayim, that we're supposed to choose life, we're supposed to choose goodness, and our choices are ultimately what are going to raise us up or pull us down. A person who hires himself out, who becomes the beis bal habayis, the keva, samuch al shulchano gimel shanim, is forfeiting to a large degree, his sense of responsibility. He no longer is taking responsibility for his actions and their consequences, but rather, he's placing that responsibility in the hands of his employer, whom he entitles to dictate how he is supposed to use his time. And therefore the Torah says, never should a Jew labor under the illusion that he and he alone is the sole person who's responsible for his fate. He can always back out. He should know that if he continues in a job, it's because of his choice, it's because of his bechira chafshes. If he backs out, it's also his bechira chafshes. He's never so bound up in slavery and servitude that his bechira is weakened beyond a significant threshold. And finally, a fourth value is that of flexibility. Imagine for a moment that you have somebody who, because of lachatz haparnasa, because of the pressure of earning an income, he needs to sign a contract with an employer who insists that he come to work very, very early in the day, especially, let's say in the middle of the winter, when this man of Kriyas Shema, the earliest time to say Kriyas Shema, the earliest time that one is allowed to daven Shmona Esrei in the winter months, now that the Congress has played around with the clock. That can be as late as 7:20. You imagine a person who has to commute to work, and they're davening Shacharis, and they're davening Shmona Esrei at 7:20, if they've got a somewhat ordinary size commute, they're not going to be able to daven Shacharis at the proper time and arrive at work at the proper time. It's a conflict between their davening Shacharis on the one hand, there are allowances for davening Shacharis earlier, up to like 50 minutes, an hour earlier, but they're not ideal allowances to take advantage of, and on the other hand, coming to work on time. So what happens if somebody enters such a contract, which requires them to daven Shacharis at a less than ideal time, which requires them to make sacrifices on their davening, or a contract which requires them to make sacrifices on their learning, on their Torah study, or on some other, you know, aspect of their religious growth and development, and then they have an opportunity to take another job which perhaps is more favorably disposed towards their practicing religious observance. So if they weren't avadim lashem, if they weren't avadayim, so then what's the difference between one job and the other job? In the end of the day, it's all a matter of their personal comfort. But Hashem says it's not so. Avadayim, the Jews, they're my servants. And as my servants, it's my work that takes precedence. And I don't give permission either to my servants or to their employers to enter into any type of agreement which is going to take away from their ability to pursue my work and to place my work first and foremost in their lives. And therefore the Torah says, don't enter long-term contracts. Don't enter contracts which are so binding that you can't pull out of them should an opportunity to grow spiritually, to develop, to enhance one's avodas Hashem, and to fulfill one's spiritual ambitions present itself. A person should always be in a circumstance where they have the opportunity to maximize their spiritual ambitions. And hence, poel chozer b'chatz hayom, a worker is allowed to back out in the middle of the day. Now these four values, I think, are reflected in some particular halachos that relate to workers, and in even more particular halachos that relate to doctors. Let's just go through some of the issues. The Ramah, again in source number 2, writes that a worker who quits for the sake of money is not entitled to quit. There's a dispute. Does it mean that the courts will force him to go back to work for the original employer? Or does it simply mean that the courts won't give him the upper hand in a salary dispute, but he actually is allowed to quit? But one way or another, it's clear that somebody who is quitting in the middle of the day solely for the sake of money is not entitled to all the privileges which are derived from the pasuk of Avadai Haim. And I think that this makes a lot of sense, particularly if we adopt the idea that it's flexibility to pursue one's spiritual ambitions, which is the reason behind these laws. Because if a person is quitting because he wants to be a more dignified person, if he's quitting because he wants to feel the greater sense of responsibility or the greater bitachon that comes from self-employment, if he's quitting because he wants to have the greater opportunity for Talmud Torah, for tefillah, for his godedos that come along with being self-employed, so then I understand. The Torah gives him the right to quit. But if he's quitting because he wants to go on vacation in Bermuda, if he's quitting because he wants to buy a 10-room mansion instead of his 3-room house, so are those Torah values? The Torah values spiritual actualization. Does the Torah value material comfort to the same extent? Perhaps there's some value that the Torah places on material comfort, but certainly not to the same extent as spiritual actualization. And for that reason, Avadai Haim, which gives a worker the right to back out in the middle of the day, may be limited to backing out for the sake of those things which Avdus Lashem demands of the worker, and not to those things which Avdus Hashem does not demand of the worker. So I think that that works very nicely with the idea of flexibility. What about people who have independent income? So again, we already pointed out that the language of the Hagos Mordechai, the language which is not reflected in the Ramah, seems to suggest that workers who have independent income, who are not samoch al shulchan balabayis bekeva for gimel shanim, who are not totally dependent on their employer for all of their expenses, perhaps have permission to enter into long-term contracts, which again seems to point not in the direction of flexibility, but rather in the direction of bitachon. That any time that that the worker is not compromising his bitachon and his trust in Hashem by entering into the contract, perhaps he's not violating this idea of avodah yehim. A third issue is a question of workers who make their own hours. A person who certainly enters into a contract with an employer, but the employer says, work at your own convenience. If you want to work from 12 midnight until 7 in the morning, fine. If you want to work from 9 to 5, fine. Make your own hours. You've got to work for me 8 hours of the day, but when those 8 hours are up to your discretion. So there is an opinion in the Trumas Hadashen that says that these type of workers actually do not have the privilege of backing out in the middle of the day. And the reason behind this opinion, which is not accepted, halacha l'maisa, but the reasoning behind it, I believe, is because such a worker already has the flexibility to pursue his spiritual ambitions built into the contract. And therefore, there is no need for the Torah to impose an additional restriction on his employer in order to ensure that this flexibility is there. He has the flexibility. No one's telling him that he has to daven shachris before nitzachama in order to commute to work on time, because if he wants to start work at 11 o'clock, he's totally entitled to do so. No one's telling him that he has to miss his special shiur in order to go to work, to go to a conference, because he has no obligation to be at this particular conference. He can work at whatever hours he wants. His flexibility is already there. So therefore, he doesn't have the special privilege of backing out in the middle of the day. What about workers who are paid for the service? Let's say that I bring my car to the mechanic, and usually it takes 20 minutes for the mechanic to perform an oil change on the car. And I tell him, I need the car in 20 minutes. He doesn't have that flexibility. He's got to do it in the next 20 minutes. Does such a worker have the ability to back out or not? Halacha says that he does have the ability. If he's not being paid for his 20 minutes, but rather for the service that he's performing, he's not being paid for the 20 minutes, he's being paid for the oil change. He does not have the ability to back out. And I think that the reasoning for this is because this worker still has a sense of responsibility. If he is a genius, if he's an Edison, and he's able to come up with a way of doing the oil change in 10 minutes, then he'll be free 10 minutes early. If he's lazy, he woke up on the wrong side of bed that morning, and it takes him 40 minutes to do the oil change, he's not going to get any extra money. This is a worker who, in spite of the fact that he doesn't have the control over the flexibility of his time, still has a sense of responsibility that comes along with knowledge that he's going to rise and he's going to fall depending on what he chooses. And therefore, such a worker, there's no need for the Torah to grant them a special exemption, a special right to back out in order to imbue them with a sense of responsibility, with a sense of achrayut, because such workers already have a sense of achrayut. There's no need for the Torah to limit the privileges of their employer in order to add to it. A fourth issue, I think I'm going to skip the fourth issue, which is a question of women. Actually, I'll mention it very briefly. The Tshuvos Chagos Yair has the following interesting comment. He says that we know that women are exempt from time-bound positive mitzvot, and men are obligated in such mitzvot. Most mitzvot, he says, which require flexibility, are time-bound positive mitzvot. Davening shachris, which a person has to do within the first 4 hours of the day, although it's an exceptional mitzvah for a number of reasons, and many people hold that women are obligated to daven shachris within the first 4 hours of the day, but many people also hold that they have no such obligation. But most other time-bound mitzvot, women are totally exempt from, and therefore, says the Chavos Yair, women have much less need of flexibility for actualizing their avdut l'Hashem, for serving Hashem within the strict demands which Hashem imposes on them. Certainly it's an admirable thing for women to try to expand their service of Hashem even to the realm of those things which he does not demand of them. But those, the job description, which is which is in the Avdus Hashem contract, is much less limiting when it comes to women than when it comes to men. And hence, the Chavos Yari says, again, he rejects this, he says, in the end of the day, there's no gender distinctions whatsoever. Women and men have the same privileges, the same responsibilities when it comes to labor relations, but he entertains, in order to give us an insight into how he's understanding this mitzvah of Avadayim, he says, to give you some insight into what the possibilities are, passively women are exempt because they don't need as much flexibility as men do in order to fulfill their avdus Lashem. I want to move on now to the last two issues, which are addressed in another responsum of the Chavos Yair. And he was dealing with the following question. There was a chazan, there was a cantor, who entered into a contract with his community to be the cantor there for a long time, for 7 years, for 8 years, seemingly in violation of the Ramah's discussion, the Ramah's ruling, that a person is not supposed to enter into a long-term contract, into a contract for more than 3 years. And then, after a couple of years, he received a more lucrative offer from a different community. In fact, his original contract not only was a contract, but he took an oath to the community that he had bound himself to serve. He took an oath that he was going to be their cantor, their chazan, for however many years it was. And then when this more lucrative opportunity came up, he suddenly had second thoughts and he wanted to back out. And so there he claimed that his oath was what's called nishba la'avor al divrei Torah. It was an oath which was in contrast with what the Torah demanded of him. The Torah says 3 years is a maximum amount of time for a contract, and he had sworn to enter a contract for longer than that. So he said, my oath is against the Torah. When the Torah and the oath are fighting it out, the Torah wins and the oath loses. So therefore he said, I should not be bound by my shidua, I should not be bound by my oath. And this question went to the Chavos Yair. So the Chavos Yair had a very interesting answer. He said that whereas ordinary workers are being paid to work for their employer, the same is not true of chazanim. Chazanim are being paid something which is called schar batala. Literally, it means they're being paid unemployment. They're getting an unemployment stipend. And I believe it's in source number four, Rabbi Schechter in his Sefer Binas Egos, he explains what this unemployment wage means. He says that the idea is that there are certain people who the Torah says are not supposed to take any compensation for the services that they provide to the community. God taught Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu for free, therefore all teachers of Torah should teach Torah for free. God heals the ill for free, therefore all doctors should heal the ill for free. God does gemilos chasadim, people also should do these things for free. Sometimes there are allowances for taking wages, but at other times those allowances are much more narrow and the person is obligated to work for free. But how are they supposed to live? A person can't survive without an income. So the community then provides them with the wages as an incentive to abstain from pursuing other types of employment in order that they should be free to apply their service to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in order that they should be free to teach, in order that they should be free to heal the ill, in order that they should be free to lead the prayer services with beautiful tunes. And that's what's called schar batala. That's what in halacha we mean by unemployment wages. And therefore, it would seem that anyone whose wages are pure schar batala, pure unemployment, is not really working as an employee of the community or as an employee of the person who's paying their wages, but rather is working as a volunteer. And those who are paying their wages are actually simply sponsoring their opportunity to volunteer in whatever profession it is. Now, it's not so simple to determine who is receiving schar batala and who isn't. As the Chavos Yair points out, when people are teaching school children, they're not receiving schar bakala, even though they're obligated to work for free. Because what they're receiving is glorified babysitter's wages. That's basically what halacha says, that when an elementary school teacher is being paid, he's receiving glorified babysitter's wages. If the child was not in school, so then the parents would have to take off from work or would have to pay a babysitter to babysit for them. And now that the child is in school, so the teacher is receiving these wages. It's not schar batala, it's not unemployment. That's the wages that he's receiving. Now doctors, it's not 100% clear whether their wages are pure schar batala, whether they're pure volunteers, or whether the wages that they're receiving are in part or in whole in exchange for the services that they provide. So this is a controversy amongst contemporary poskim still. Rabbi Schechter here in source number 4 clearly says, and Rabbi Moshe Feinstein also writes this in his Tshuvos, that doctors are pure volunteers. They're not working for the person who's paying them. They're working directly for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, directly for the Melech Malchei Hamlachim. They're actualizing Avadai Haim in the most exalted sense of the word, as opposed to other posting in source number 5, you see somebody who says that that doctors are actually being compensated for their services. Rabbi Chaim David Alevi and Rabbi Gorin, in articles in journals, have a more nuanced perspective and say that it's partially they're being paid for their tircha, partially they're being paid for the effort, the commute, or something like that. Partially they're being paid as an incentive to volunteer. But certainly from Rabbi Schechter's approach and Rabbi Moshe Feinstein's approach, it emerges that doctors are pure volunteers. They're pure avadim Hashem. There's no intermediary. In the corporate structure of the cosmos, they are the tier below, the top management. The top below, melech malchim lachem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In no sense are they avadim la'avadim. They have no boss other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And for that reason, the Chavos Yoyah writes, that perhaps we hold them to a higher level of responsibility when it comes to backing out in the middle of the day. An ordinary worker is permitted to back out in the middle of the day because the dignity of his being an Eved Lashem demands that he not be an Eved La'avadim, that he not be a worker of his employer, that he not be a servant of his boss, but rather that he be a pure Eved Lashem, and in order to do that, he must have the ability to back out. But a doctor, before he or she enters into the contract, is already an Eved Hashem. And even when there's a contract, it's just an agreement. I'm going to volunteer my services for a certain amount of time, and they're going to give me an incentive to volunteer my services for that amount of time. And as such, the Chavos Yoyah, I believe, would support the conclusion that the right of a doctor to strike is far more curtailed than that of any other segment of the labor force, and the reason for that is because the doctors have this special and unique connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, I want to thank you all for coming, and have a wonderful week.